Tasmai Gurave Namaha. So today we are celebrating Vaishnava Diksha. Of course, Diksha means Diksha indicates Divyagan, just like we chant every morning, Divyagan Vidhi Prakashito, that the spiritual master gives us transcendental knowledge in the heart. And so we have to ask, where does that transcendental knowledge come from? Obviously, it comes from Krishna, because the spiritual master, in order to be a bona fide spiritual master, has to be in an authorized reciprocal succession coming down directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Evam param para pratam, evam raja sharo vidhu. As Krishna states in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that one must be established in reciprocal succession, and one must get their mantras, just like today some of the devotees are getting mantras, Gayatri mantras, and one devotee is taking the first initiation, which is Harinam Mahamantra, Harinam initiation, or Harinam Diksha. So the mantras must come through disciplic succession. Otherwise, they don't have any effect. There's this one verse from the Hari Bhakti Shudaya that Sanatana Goswami would often quote. Samvaraya vinaye mantrashte nishpada mataha. That if one receives a mantra but it does not come in from disciplic succession, then it has no effect. It will not help one advance in devotional service. So one must accept the spiritual master in disciplic succession. This is very important. And so, how do you understand that your spiritual master or a spiritual master is in disciplic succession? It's very easy. There are four bona fide disciplic successions. There's the Brahma Sampradaya, Rudra Sampradaya, Kumara Sampradaya, and Lakshmi Sampradaya. And so you can actually examine the history to see if that disciplic succession is unbroken. And then ultimately, to see if the present representative, though the person you will accept as spiritual master, is properly situated in disciplic succession. And there's a nice verse. Tadviganartam sagunameva vigachet samitpani shrotriyam brahmanaitvisham. That the spiritual master who one must accept to advance in devotional service must be samitpani. He must be a servant of his spiritual master. This is very important. That one who is actually guru, he doesn't think himself guru, he thinks himself servant. Just like we hear about the jiva soul's constitutional position, jivera svarupohoi nitya krishna das. So, we are actually serving, all of us, we are serving the Supreme Personality of God. And some people have the position of being spiritual master, and they're serving in that way, and other people have the position of cooking in the kitchen or doing deity worship or any of the many services that are there in the Krishna consciousness movement. So this samitpani basically means to serve, to bring water, which means to serve very, very humbly the spiritual master, to consider oneself not only a servant, but a humble servant. Because in the traditional days, the guru would have his ashram, and the disciples would serve the guru by bringing wood and water personally by hand. Not that they would hire somebody. They would do it personally. Just like the example of Krishna, 5,000 years ago, even Krishna was serving his spiritual master, Sandapani Muni, in a very humble way. And one time, of course, he got trapped in the forest when there was a rainfall. He was serving so humbly, and his spiritual master was very, very worried about him. And this Sudama Brahman was with him too at the same time. And they were practically starving. That story is there. They were practically starving because they were serving their spiritual master, and their spiritual master had requested them to do this, and they were so dedicated to Sandapani Muni. So a bona fide spiritual master must have that quality, that regardless of his or her desires, one serves according to what the spiritual master wants, not according to how one wants to serve, but according to how the spiritual master wants one to serve. I think you all understand that. In the beginning stage of devotional service, we serve according to the way we want to do. And then when one is more advanced, one serves the way Krishna wants you to do. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna wanted to serve Krishna in a way that was different from the way that Krishna wanted him to serve. Arjuna wanted to renounce everything, and Krishna said, no, you fight. Arjuna did not like that instruction very much. He objected. But ultimately he surrendered to Krishna. So that is advanced devotee. So part of this surrender to Krishna and disciplic succession means being faithful to Srila Prabhupada, who was the ultimate Siksha Guru for everybody in the Krishna consciousness movement. Which means that we serve Srila Prabhupada by serving his mission. Extremely important. Extremely important. All of us are servants inside ISKCON of Srila Prabhupada's mission. And all of us have a very deep and personal connection with this divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. So the first quality of spiritual master is that. Someone who is connected in service. Samitpani. And the second quality is Shrotriyam. One must have heard nicely from the spiritual master and therefore able to repeat nicely. And the last quality is Brahmanishtam. Someone who doesn't deviate from the service of the spiritual master. Or is fixed. Nishtam. Fixed. Steady in the service of the spiritual master. So once one finds a spiritual master like that, and one approaches the spiritual master, and surrenders, takes instruction, gets guided according to one's psychophysical nature. And part of that process is taking initiation, which is an essential process. There's two types of initiation. One type that we have in the Krishna consciousness movement is the Harinam initiation, that's first initiation. Second type is the Brahman Diksha, or Brahman initiation. I'm going to describe each one very, very briefly. So the Harinam initiation means that one takes a vow to serve the Guru and the holy names by avoiding certain activities such as illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling. Of course, meat eating means meat, fish, eggs, and everything that's non-vegetarian. And one vows to chant a fixed number of rounds daily, 16 rounds. So this is a very minimal amount of rounds. Actually, in our disciplic succession, it's considered that anyone who chants less than 64 rounds is fallen. That's been the tradition. However, Srila Prabhupada has reduced that requirement to 16 minimum. So everyone should chant 16 minimum. And then, on other days when they have time, especially on Ekadasi, attempt to chant more rounds. And I highly recommend, when devotees have an opportunity, that they chant 64 rounds. At least one day in their lives, or at least one day every 2 weeks, whenever possible. You will find that if you chant 64 rounds, it will change your whole life. Because our real connection is with the holy names. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that is our real friend in this world, the Nam. And by chanting Krishna's name, Krishna's form, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's qualities will all be revealed to us automatically. But when we chant Krishna's names, even though there's no hard and fast rules for chanting, There are things that we should avoid if we want to make quick advancement, and those things are the 10 offenses. The 10 offenses are as follows. First offense is to think that the name, names of the demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Ganesh, and all the rest of them, are equal to or independent of the holy name of Krishna. In other words, one shouldn't think that the names of the demigods, which are simply positions rather than their personal names, are the same as them or have the same potency. And then also the offense is there to blaspheme. Actually, the first one is to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. That is a great offense. Because Krishna considers as most dear his devotees. And if you offend Krishna's devotees, either by words or physically or in any way, even by neglect, Krishna becomes very displeased. And so, next offense is to disobey the order of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is speaking on behalf of Krishna, representing Krishna. Next offense is to blaspheme the Vedic literatures, or literatures which are in accordance with the Vedic literatures. Next offense is to consider the glories of chanting Hare Krishna to be imagination. Next offense is to give some imaginative interpretation on the holy name of the Lord. And next offense is to commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting. Of course, when one chants, it eradicates all of one's karma. However, one shouldn't take advantage of that. And let's say if someone is drinking kava, in between each glass or each, how do they drink kava? Sip? They sip it. In between each sip of kava, you shouldn't think that, oh, I just chant Hare Krishna, I'll become free of the resultant reaction from drinking this activity, this substance, which is intoxication. Why don't we take intoxication? Because it puts you in an illusion within an illusion, deeper into illusion. So that's the offense. And the next offense is to consider the chanting like one of the ritualistic activities to be found in the Vedic literatures, like Karmakanda rituals. We have so many rituals that we do, even in Krishna consciousness. We have rituals, like we have our dress style, which is a dhoti and a sari. And that's nice. But the chanting is of a different quality, a different category. The chanting is not equivalent to the dress or to the different rituals we do. The chanting is directly Krishna. It is not simply a cultural thing. I mean, the dhotis, the saris, that's a cultural thing. But the chanting is trans-cultural. That means it transcends culture. Next offense is to instruct the faithless persons about chanting, about the holy name. That is, if someone doesn't have faith or someone could blaspheme or criticize, we're very careful about instructing them. And the last offense, 10th offense, is to not have complete faith in the chanting of Hare Krishna and to maintain so many material attachments, even after understanding the instructions in this matter, so many instructions in this matter. Of course, it's not offensive to have material attachments. It's offensive to maintain them. One should be trying to get rid of them. Material attachments means I and mine, attachments to this body, attachments to the body designations, like I am of a certain nationality, or a certain, I'm a man or a woman, or I am a doctor. What's this? Oh, thank you. What we need. Or I'm a doctor, or I'm an engineer, or I'm a lawyer. I mean, these are just temporary designations. One has to get rid of them. Sarva Parivanin Niramuktam, Tatvara Pratraina Nirmalam, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. We give up all these upadis or false designations and understand that we're servants of Krishna. And then also, it's offensive to be inattentive while chanting. Inattentive means we're letting the mind wander, we're thinking of so many other things, we're spacing out, so many ways of being inattentive. When you're chanting, you should concentrate on the sound of the holy names and pray to Krishna to help you concentrate on the sound of the holy names. And ultimately, the form of the Lord will manifest before you. You can pray to the deities, too. What I usually suggest is before someone chants, they have a sankalpa. That means an intention. They say, I'm chanting because I want to become a pure devotee. I want to associate with my spiritual master. I want to become purified. Some good intention like that. And you chant with that intention in mind. And that helps you focus on the holy names. So one who is actually a good chanter will be very attentive to avoid these offenses. And at the same time, they will cultivate the right mood by studying especially the Shikshashtika, which is given to us by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Shikshashtika contains Lord Chaitanya's personal instructions on what mood to cultivate while you're chanting. So very important. That's first initiation. And second initiation is called Brahman initiation, because not that one becomes a ritualistic Brahmana, but one becomes a real Brahmana. A real Brahmana is not a Kali Yuga Brahmana, Brahma Bandhu. That is someone who simply has a thread. Of course, ladies don't have threads. Not yet. That's not a Brahmana. One who has a thread, one who has a name, Trivedi, Chaturvedi, Sharma. That's not what Brahman means. The direct meaning of Brahman is one who knows Brahman. And in order to know Brahman, you have to cultivate and act in the mode of goodness. Therefore, Krishna gives us this very nice verse in the Gita to explain this. He says the qualities of a Brahman are as follows. Sama, Dhamma, Tapaksho, Chap. He must be, he or she, must be equipoised. That means happiness, distress, sickness, health, friendship, enemies, whatever. One remains exactly calm and focused on the goal of life regardless of the external circumstances, disease or even death. Just like my great godbrother, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he had terminal cancer. And many people, or most people, when they have some terminal disease, they get very frightened. And the doctors are very reluctant to tell them, oh, you're going to die in, what, 6 months, 5 months, 3 months, whatever. So, because people say, no, no, doctor, do something. But my godbrother, Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, when he was informed, he was very calm. And the doctors asked him, didn't you hear what we said? We said, you're going to die in a few months. You have some problem with your hearing? And he said, no, I've heard. The doctors were shocked because he had that faith. And therefore, he was so steady, he was able to instruct us and all of the devotees, not only his disciples, but everybody, and how to leave one's body, how a Vaishnava leaves one's body. Because that's the ultimate test. So that sama, being equipoised, even applies at the time of death, especially applies at the time of death. Because if you're not equipoised and focused on Krishna at the time of death, and you're focused on something else, that's where you go. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam yajate ante kalevaram. Let's say, of course, none of you have this, but let's say you have a pet at home, a pet dog. Obviously you don't. But in the Western world, many people keep pets. Some of my disciples have dogs in the Western world. Some have fish. Some have ants. You know what an ant is? Ants? Little ants? You don't know what an ant is? So let's say you have these pets and you're giving your heart to the pet. Like, I love my dog. They have people with dogs here? And they love them? Even I was in India and I was at Juhu and people were walking these dogs on the beach. And they had, the dogs, they had previously gone to the hairdresser. How do you say hairdresser in Hindi? No, shoot Hindi. What? No, shoot Hindi. No, you don't know shoot Hindi. Surrendering. Yes, surrendering, that's it. That's shoot Hindi. See, I know more than you do. So they're even taking their dogs to the hairdresser. And they're having curlers put on the dog. So then at the time of death, what are they thinking of? Dog. And what do they become? They become dog. So therefore, it's important to keep one's mind peaceful. So the time of death, you can think of Krishna. And then you go back to Godhead. So sama and then dhamma. Dhamma means self-controlled or tame, like you tame an animal. So the senses right now are adhamma or adantagopya. They're uncontrolled. Just like if you see some nice food, immediately your mind goes there. You see a restaurant, not you of course, but I'm talking in general. Then you're thinking, oh, I must taste it. I must eat it. So there's five senses, actually six that include the mind. Or if you hear about some nice Bollywood film, then you're thinking, I must see it. We had one devotee who, while she was chanting her japa, would watch Bollywood films every day. You understand? Bollywood films. So that is not dhamma. Samadhamma tapa, and austerity. That's the next quality of a Brahmana. Austerity, it means accepting everything that pleases Krishna and rejecting everything that displeases Krishna. That's austerity. Austerity doesn't mean to torture the body. It means to accept things favorable for Krishna consciousness and reject things unfavorable. And then socha, which means cleanliness. We maintain our cleanliness by always remembering Krishna, just like the prayer that was just chanted. Om pavitra pavitrava sarvavastam gatopiva yaksmaret pundarikaksham sabhaya abhyantara shuti shri vishnu shri vishnu shri vishnu. That if one remembers the Supreme Lord always, especially by chanting the names, then one remains pure, pavitra. Whatever one's background, om pavitra pavitrava. Whether one is coming from pure background or impure background, yaksmaret pundarikaksha. If you remember the lotus-eyed Lord, then you remain pure, you remain clean. So that's internal cleanliness. External cleanliness means cleaning the body and regularly. Brahmins generally should bathe 3 times a day, if not possible, at least 2 times a day, if they happen to be working somewhere. So that's socham. And then the next one is shanti rajavam. That tolerant of all the things that will happen in this world. Honest, being honest. A Brahmin never lies. Actually, a Brahmin can only lie to save someone's life. That's the only time it's allowed. Let's say some dacoits are coming. You all know what dacoits are? Yeah. Dacoits are coming and they want to attack Sumuk. And Sumuk is hiding in my room. And the dacoits say to me, Maharaj, where is Sumuk? So then it's all right to lie. I say, oh, I never saw him. I don't even know who you're talking about. Then it's all right to lie to save someone's life. So it would be wrong to say, he's in the room, kill him. That would be the wrong thing. So certain circumstances we can understand. But in normal circumstances, we should never lie to anyone. Because as soon as you lie, Krishna will be displeased. There's this statement in the Vedic literatures that the earth cannot bear the weight of a sinful liar. Very important. And once you lie, nobody will trust you anymore. If you lie, you're representing Krishna. People think that all the devotees are all liars. They will not even trust Hare Krishna movement again. So it's very important, always be truthful, like Yudhisthira Maharaj. He was known, Dhammaraj, known to be always truthful. So that's truthfulness. So, samadhanam tapakshacham shantirajam evacha jnanam. Then, to regularly read Srila Prabhupada's books, and vijnana, to practice what's in Prabhupada's books. Astikam, being religious, in other words, devoted to Krishna, and Brahma Karma Svabhavajam. These are the qualities, that's what makes someone a Brahmin. To cultivate the mode of goodness. By doing other things, we're cultivating other modes of nature. We do not realize how dangerous this world is, that everything is covered by a certain mode or combination of modes of nature. And when you come in contact with it, your consciousness gets affected. Karanam guna sangasha sarasad janma jonishu. Like if you listen to certain music in the mode of ignorance, then your consciousness becomes in the mode of ignorance. Or if you listen to Krishna conscious music, then your consciousness gets elevated. So it's very important to cultivate this mode of goodness. And that's what a brahmana is. So those of you who are taking second initiation, when you develop and if you develop those qualities, then you're an actual brahmana. The initiation is giving you an opportunity to develop and cultivate those qualities. Don't think that just because you have initiation, you're a brahmana. That's the same thing as someone thinking because they have a name, Sharma, they're a brahmana. Doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that. So these are the two types of initiation that are being taking place today. And I think we'll proceed with the ceremony at this point so we can give the name to the first initiate. Now, right? So you can come up with all the basis of Prabhupada and the deities.